Get it done.
Revolution Radio, where we do the nasty work. www.freedomslips.com.
It's a challenge. Let's give him one.
The voice that whispers in your ears are the screams that you fear. The mind you cannot defy is the heart that rules mankind. The people who made you are the gods that will save you. And I am Steve Travesty. I am the voice. The ghost in the machine. Ghost in the Machine, Tuesdays, 8 p.m., Studio A.
Right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
Re-verify our range to target.
This incredible race of humans does have a future, and it is in the start.
I want the truth.
We are going out there to reclaim our rightful place.
Hi, this is Robert Pepino, host of the Whole Agenda Radio Show.
Who's your connection?
Starting this Friday at midnight Eastern Time, I'll set the airwaves on fire by bringing you hard-hitting guests who are not afraid to speak the truth.
I'm going to make them an offer, can't we?
So join the Whole Agenda Radio Show on Friday nights right here on Revolution Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. If you plan to call in and speak with one of our hosts, please turn down your radio and separate yourself from any background noise and wait for the area code to be called on before you speak. And don't forget, Revolution Radio freedomslips.com is listener supported. So stop by the homepage, freedomslips.com, visit the site support area to help support the host you're listening to's airtime. Thank you. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where the truth never sleeps.
Solaris Blue Raven.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Raven Star's Witching Hour. I'm your host and head witch, Miss Solaris Blue Raven, at the helm this evening. I want to give a shout-out to everybody at Revolution Radio, staff producers, listeners, chat room, and thank everybody for tuning in tonight. We are 100% listener-supported, so if you like what you're hearing, please click on the donate button. We appreciate your support, and thank you for any contribution you can make to this excellent station here at freedomslips.com. And the station's working on some upgrades, so if you could go ahead and find it in your heart to give us some extra donations, that'd be awesome. So we can go ahead and keep this station live, running, and putting out the good information out there, all the truth that you guys need to hear. So anyways, any donations you can do this month would really be appreciated from all of us here at Revolution Radio. And you are listening to Studio A. And my special guest this evening is Jean Chip Tatum. And Jean Chip Tatum was a Vietnam Special Forces Air Combat Controller Defense Intelligence Asset. If I can speak, let me try that again. Jean Chip Tatum was a Vietnam Special Forces Air Combat Controller Defense Intelligence Asset and U.S. Army Special Operations Pilot flying classified missions during the U.S. invasion of Grenada. Tatum was also involved in the Nixon administration's relations with China, NASA's Apollo program, the Iran-Contra affair, and several other classified intelligence operations dating through 1992. A 25-year CIA deep cover agent and a member of the ultra-secret Pegasus hit team working directly for the sitting president. And his website is www.chiptatum.com. And please welcome Chip to the show this evening. And Chip, how you doing?
Hi, doing wonderful, thanks.
Great. Well, I'm sure you can speak better than me this evening.
I don't know. I'm still getting out of a yawn here.
Are you really? I need to get my coffee. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, thanks for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate where you've been also and the information you're putting out here. So we have a lot to discuss tonight, and for a lot of people who probably aren't familiar with you, I'm pretty sure a lot of our listeners are already pretty much tuned into what you've been involved in. But can you fill everybody in so far as where you've been and what you're working on right now and what you're involved in and what's going on in your orbit?
Wow. Where I've been. Well, actually, many of you might know that I disappeared for a long time at the turn of the century. Sounds a long time ago, doesn't it? Around 2000, I left and went to South America to live, and had lived down there through 2012. I had a son, so I came back up to the U.S. to get his citizenship, and I've been here since 2012, getting all the documents in line for his citizenship. And let me tell you something: the cost of now, this is a boy who was born to an American citizen, and the difficulty I've had in getting his citizenship and the cost is horrible. I can see why there's so many people just coming in not wanting to go through the system, because it's so difficult. 2 years worth of paperwork.
Wow. And then they have the illegals, and of course there's no paperwork probably.
Yeah, I mean, that it's funny because I'd spent over $5,000 getting him legal. He was made legal in August of this year. And
oh, wow.
And my attorney had told me from the beginning, he said, you know, if you just sneak him in here, he said, I know you can get him in here. Just sneak him in here, and we'll have him legal within a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
So, just a side note for everyone, you know, I can see why there's so much resistance to it. And look, if Congress can't figure out what they're doing, why in the world would these bureaucrats figure out how to do what they need to do?
Mm-hmm. So true. And also, you've got some problems here insofar as having some legal issues, right?
Yeah. Because I left the United States after I was charged with treason, jailed, and then let go, I was put on a federal probation. And when I left the United States, I was still on federal probation. When I left, I had been invited to leave.
Mm-hmm.
by certain elements of the government. And so I took their advice and I left. And they put me on probation, so I knew that when I came back and to do this paperwork for my son, that I would have to stand the probation court again. And it's quite funny because, you know, everyone hears about extraditions and everything. The U.S. Marshals and the Department of Justice knew where I was. And when I went to the embassy in Bogota, I was living in Colombia. When I went to the embassy in Bogota, I spoke to the the head of security there, and I explained to him who I was, and he said, "Who?" And I told him who I was again. He said, "Wait a minute." He said, "Oh yeah, we've got a there's a warrant back in the States for you to send you back." He said, "But we can't extradite you because it's not extraditable." I said, "Okay, well I'm here." He said, "Well, wait a minute, we do want you, so I'll arrange for that." I said, "Okay." He said, "Hey, can you come back tomorrow?"
Oh man!
So I did, and I arranged. I had actually arranged through my attorney back here and a good friend who was still a federal agent that I'd worked with to come back to the United States. And you know, I came back voluntarily on my own and had arranged for the flight to Tampa. When I got to Miami, there were no less than 8 federal agents waiting for me. They boarded the aircraft, made everyone sit down, boarded the aircraft, had me come to the front, handcuffed me, patted me down, marched me through the airport lounge like it's the biggest criminal in the world. I mean, it was a show that they
had. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's almost laughable when you think about all the people. We have so many dirty people right now in D.C., and then you get hassled like this. It doesn't make much sense to me, honestly.
Yeah, they're pretty dirty in D.C. I can attest to that.
Yeah, we have a lot to discuss tonight. and also, I'd like to hear a little bit about, I mean, I know obviously you worked with the senior Bush, right? The Daddy Bush,
I worked with every president up through Clinton.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Starting with Nixon. I'm not that old, folks, starting with Nixon.
So tell me, which one is the worst?
Oh, Bush.
It is the old
He's the
old man,
evil,
right?
Evilest damn thing I've ever seen in my life. I mean, he stops at nothing. When we were given missions, we knew that they were going to be difficult missions, and we talked about the possibility of collateral damage. He didn't care. He said, "I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. I'll take care of the damage."
Right, and then people are collateral damage, obviously. And, well, you know, looking at the timeline of today and looking at America right now with everything that's going on, and some of it might be false flags, but what do you think is going on here? Does it seem to you like there is collateral damage in the name of people and citizens here right now being expendable?
Oh, citizens have always been expendable.
Right.
Yeah,
but it seems like they're really in a full speed ahead syndrome here in the United States with, I don't even think, well, it could be a true Ebola thing or it couldn't. It could be a false flag. I mean, there's so many things happening simultaneously right now. What's your impression of all this?
Well, I started writing about Ebola back in, back in April with Veterans Today, talking about what was going to be coming and that it was coming here, coming to a theater near you.
Right. I remember seeing that article, by the way.
And Ebola is real. I mean, the only question is, who's using it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And how will they use that to their benefit? And that's the thing. Many things happen. They're agents of opportunity, these people are. And the minute that they see an opportunity, they'll expand on that opportunity. They'll abuse that opportunity at the cost of us.
Right. Yeah, I see that too. Well, it seems to me like the United States is becoming a red zone. I mean, it's becoming a bad place to live. And as a concerned, you know, American, I mean, I'm seriously considering leaving this country, and I would never do that. But I don't like what's happening here. And it seems like in D.C. we have people right now that are literally committing treason. And they're not being held accountable. So where's their arrest?
Well, you know, when you own the Department of Justice, you know, there is none. So
right. Yeah. So that's what I mean. When you're dealing with lawlessness, how do you get through it all? So what's the solution, you think?
Well, I'm going back down.
Yeah, we're all following you. Columbia, here, there, now.
Perhaps we should. I've got a small farm down there. Maybe I need to get a bigger farm.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I'm telling you, this is not good. What I'm reading here right now on this timeline is just not real good for any American. And I'm surprised. Now, tell me this. Why does the military allow this kind of thing to happen? And why aren't they intercepting when they know darn well there's treason being committed in D.C. and there's dirty, you know, just dirty agendas happening right and left? Why is no one intercepting this?
Well, you know, the military is being kept pretty busy right now, aren't they?
Mm-hmm, very much so.
Yeah, and you know, and beyond that, it's really not the military's job to catch mm-hmm. this, you know. And that's the way America was built. That's the way the Constitution was built. The United States military is to defend the United States from foreign attacks. We have other entities within the United States which are to defend against these treasonous activities.
Right.
Thus, the U.S. Marshals are the actual police of the United States, and they have arresting authority. You know, the FBI until 9/11 didn't have arresting authority, and people don't realize that if you were picked up by the FBI or if the FBI surrounded you, you could demand that they get a local sheriff or a local law enforcement officer. Boy, they hate that when you do that too. Mm. So that's first-hand knowledge, by the way.
Interesting. Yeah. So well, the U.S. Marshals obviously aren't really doing a whole lot then. And what about the generals? Nobody. Who really can actually go into D.C. right now and say, in theory, okay, say we have somebody go in there and say you're incompetent, you've put the American people in harm's way, we're removing you from duty. Is there anybody right now in America that can do that and go into D.C., into the White House and do that?
No, Congress has to do that.
Oh, forget it. Yeah, we're screwed.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because that's what we need, honestly. When I'm looking at this assessment, now I could be wrong, but what do you think about this? What's your impression of this? Because I really think we're in trouble. I'm getting a really bad vibe about what's happening in America, and it's not just about the Ebola. It's about a lot of other things. It's about the borders being wide open and all these other potential terrorists and this and that to come through. I mean, we've got chaos in motion here, and nobody's stepping up and defending the people or true America.
Well, listen, the people are too complacent. They could do it themselves. Look at the people in Hong Kong.
Right.
They're doing something about what they're tired of. And, you know, complacency has pulled all the way through to the military, to law enforcement, to everything. Let's give the best example in the world that we've just recently seen, the United States Secret Service. This small group, I mean, it's a small group that's on White House staff, relatively speaking. Their only job is to guard that front door of the White House. And they can't, I mean, the door is not that big.
Uh-huh.
And they can't do it, or they won't do it. Now, well, that's the question. The real question is, are they allowing a message to be sent to the President of the United States?
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And what about the surveillance cameras? You can't tell me they don't have surveillance.
They have more than that on the roof of that place, I'll tell you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, you know, so how could that person just kind of waltz in unless it was a testing ground?
Well, exactly. Or yeah, it was a message. And not only that, you have the CDC, the elevator at CDC, when the president was coming down here to Tampa, where I am. He stopped at Atlanta first to announce the movement of 3,000 nuclear biological chemical specialists to Africa so that Ebola wouldn't make it here. Yeah, look how that worked. And
you know, that makes no sense to me at all.
Well, you know how you stop Ebola from getting here?
Mm-hmm.
Close their international airports in Africa.
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah, hello. So why can't they do that? I mean, isn't it kind of like a no-brainer?
They can. It's that easy.
But they're not. I mean, this is what's driving me crazy. They're not making any rational decisions. They're like completely in la-la land.
No, there's no money in it.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Well, at everybody's expense now.
Mm, yep.
That's what it boils down to. And yeah,
it's all about the money. It's all about the money. You know,
and how?
I'd love to see the congressmen, you know, have to wear... you know the uniforms that the race car drivers use, wear, the coveralls, with all their sponsors? I think our congressmen should have to wear the same thing with tags of their sponsors on them so we can see.
I totally agree. Well, I think a lot of them are actually insane. I don't think they're rational at all. It's very concerning. The more I look at them, the more you can just profile them and look in their eyes and see that they're psychotic. I mean, what are we dealing with here in America?
Well, it takes a special personality to get into politics, and that was while we were in Pegasus. That was one of our fortes in neutralizing them, as we knew how to work with those personalities and the egos and use those against them.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's very disturbing nonetheless. I'll tell you what, just from what I'm picking up on in the pulse right now in America is really sickening. And you're right, I think the people are complacent, and I think that they're just going to allow this to happen until it becomes like a zeroed-out situation. So I see a dead zone. This is my prediction. Within 2 years, I think America's going to be a dead zone.
Well, if you live overseas where I've lived, they've seen that for years of the United States. You don't see as many... comfortable people in Central South America trying to get into the United States for visas. You see the very poor that they're shipping up here to get rid of them. They're shipping their problems up here to burden this place and clean up the mess down there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm sorry to hear that you're...
Send us your homeless. Send us your...
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, well, really, we're becoming a third world country if we're not already. That's the bottom line.
Well, you know, everyone talks about America being, you know, the number one country in the world. I don't know what we're number one in any longer.
No. No, we're not. And every single thing I purchase, I swear to you, I mean, even when I try not to buy it from outside the U.S., it's always from outside the United States. Not one thing is from here.
You know, all of our light bulbs. There's a joke in Colombia about the United States. They said if the United States messes too much with China, they'll be a very dark country. Mm-hmm. All of our light bulbs are made in China now.
Yeah. Well, plus the lead and everything else that we're getting contaminated with. It's kind of a free for all, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
Let us not forget Fukushima. Whatever is going on over there.
Mm-hmm.
All sorts of other stuff. So.
And coming over here.
Exactly. So what is your impression of everything? What are you looking into right now? What is your latest articles? Or what are they on?
Oh, my latest articles are you know, before I left, when I worked for Bill Colby, he told me, Chip, you need to keep some insurance. You need to gather some insurance. So over the years, and I mean, I was there for many, many years, 22 years, 24 years altogether. And so I started gathering insurance. I gathered documents. I gathered audio tapes, videotapes, and I kept them, stored them. And what's amazing to me is how America uses a revolving door in politics. They keep going after these same few families. And if they understood, and I don't know how to get it across to them, if they understood how non-American these families are, and I'm talking about the Bushes and the Clintons, how they are not there, absolutely not there for anyone's interest in the United States. They all have their alliances, and it's not with the people of the United States. And so I'm going to start releasing some of that insurance.
Oh, excellent. And when's that going to happen?
It's happening. It's being written. The article's being written, and then I'll release the article, and then I'll start releasing the documents in a timely manner as it's most effective. You know, I can throw something out there today, but it wouldn't do any good.
Why is that?
Because people wouldn't do a damn thing with it now.
Right.
These people haven't announced their runs. They haven't done what they they haven't announced yet. And and I need to get it to a point, and I need to get myself to a point that what I put out there can be tested, can be authenticated, and then I'll do it.
Excellent. Well, I applaud you for that. You know, honestly, I mean, a lot of us already really do pick up on the fact that the Bush and the Clintons and all these other guys are a bunch of clowns and they don't care about this country or the people. I mean, that's quite obvious. But there are a lot of people who don't, and they sit there with rah-rah attitudes with everybody and their mother who runs for office without really understanding the bigger scenery.
Yeah, I mean, and if you sit outside, well, that most people haven't left the United States. So this is all they know. And
right.
And so it's, you know, it's kind of, they've got blinders on. That's the only way I can look at it.
It's a crash course now because now it's really in our face, in my opinion. I think everything's in our face in the United States right now. People are being forced into a position of having to wake up and understand what's happening here. But I think it's almost too little too late. I mean, that's my impression insofar as the people themselves go.
Yeah, I've pretty well come to that conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I could do any more. I've been putting truth out for a very long time, and I wonder, too, I mean, do people even appreciate the truth? Do they respect the truth? Do they even know what the difference is between truth and lies? Because they've been listening to lies for so long that when you finally tell them the truth, do they really understand it, you know?
Well, and more than that, someone like me, when I do something like this, I'm going to have to give up a pound of flesh. And, you know, I have to finally sit down and look at it. Is it worth giving up any more flesh for the complacency of these people?
Right. You have to. Yeah.
To what cause is this? Because they just don't seem to care.
I totally agree with you on that. It's sad to say, and it's sad but true. And you have to take care of yourself. And you know, I respect you for putting the information out. I really do. But at the same time, I'm wondering at this point in the continuum. I think people are just plain. Just not waking up, and I don't think it's going to make a difference to a lot of different people. So,
well, I'm going to give them an ounce of flesh, and then I'm going back down south.
Then I think that's a good idea, and honestly, I keep telling people, you know, pay attention to what's happening here in the U.S. and don't get stuck here, because I have a feeling they're going to close us in. they're going to use this Ebola as an excuse to do so. What's your impression?
Well, you know, it's easy for them to do that. Look, all they have to do is create panic in the eyes of the Americans. Americans can hear of it all day long, but the minute they actually see it, they need visual aids. Now they have a visual aid of something here in the United States, so now it can affect them. Look what happened with the football player Rice. You know, he slapped his wife around, knocked her out in the elevator, and America said, and NFL said, okay. But the minute that we had visual aids on that, it went viral. So I think it's the same. You know, once they get visual aids with Ebola, it goes viral. And and now look at what's going to happen. Everyone that sneezes is going to end up in an emergency room thinking, and this is flu season coming up. Look at what it's going to do to the infrastructure of our hospital system. It's going to just go batty, and they know that. And, you know, there's over 8 people right now in various hospitals that I know of around the United States that are probably positive for Ebola. 2 that are positive that they haven't announced, other than the guy in Texas, and 5 more. So, you know, they can't let it be known. They cannot let it be known that this is starting to run here.
Well, what's interesting is they allowed it. Also, they brought it here. That's the thing. We wouldn't be having an issue had they not brought it here to begin with.
Close the airport. Well, you know,
no kidding.
The United States government owns the patent to Ebola.
Right. Absolutely.
People think I'm crazy, but there is a patent. And
people are disputing
patent.
That.
Yeah, no.
There was a gentleman disputing that, and I'm like, there's no way. I know we have a patent on it also. He was saying, well, no, they applied for a patent. No, we have one.
they didn't. No, they did. They applied for a patent, and it was granted. But it's what's called a type of patent that a continuing patent that they can upgrade, and you know, I gave the link to it. I think I put it on Facebook. But if someone wants to come to my website tomorrow, I'll have the full patent there. They can download it and read it and tell me it's not real.
Right.
And I'll give them the link right to USPO, USPTO, U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, where they can go right into it.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me like it's a eugenics program that they're running here in the United States. That's my own impression.
I think it's years ago in Jupiter Island when I was working in the operational subgroups. They made the statement they did a little dog and pony show on how their world how am I going to put this so people understand how the world zoning, it's like they're doing zoning for the whole world. This part of the world we want to do this part is for this. And when they talked about the United States, you know, there were 3 military officers from the OSGs there, 3 of us from commanders of the OSGs, and we looked at each other like, these guys are out of their damn mind. I said, sir, excuse me, I was speaking to Bush at the time. I said, do you really think that the American people, or that the military, or that the police will stand for this to happen? He said, well, I'll tell you what, son, this is how we're going to do it. We're going to train the military so that they are police, and so that they're accustomed to working with this kind. And that's exactly what they've done with these with these runs overseas, with Afghanistan. My son was a special operations special forces trainer at Fort Benning, and about 2 months ago he left active duty service. Said, Dad, I can't do it anymore. After 14 and a half years, Dad, I just can't do it anymore. They, you know, we're not here to defend the United States. It's all changed.
It certainly has. And a lot of foreigners are now in the military, is that right?
Yeah, but there have always been foreigners in the military.
But isn't it a little bit more intense now than it used to be, or no?
Well, we pull a lot of them in because we need their language specialties and their social specialties from the Middle East, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's too bad they're not on our side, and I don't think they are. And I'm looking at the militarization of the police as well, and it's very disturbing to see this. You know, it just reminds me of Nazi Germany or something. It's really twisted.
And that's exactly how people from overseas look at the United States, like it's a closed state.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly getting that way, and it's going to get worse, I'm sure.
Well, just look at it, the NSA. Tell me they're not. We just collect data, right? Mm-hmm. What is data? Everything we are.
Exactly. Yeah, I know how they use it with psychotronic warfare too. So that's another avenue of what they can deploy it. You know, but anyways, yeah, it's pretty sickening to me. The whole scenario is just getting worse by the day. I'd like to wake up one day and just have it be everything reset in the United States in a good way, but I don't think that's going to happen, huh?
A lot of friends said, oh, we're expecting the reset. We're going to have the financial reset. We're going to have this reset. We're going to have this reset. I said, right, okay. You know, when I look at what's gone on in the United States, in that time that I was gone, and I came back to the United States and saw what a horrible economic position it was in, I see a huge part of that already done. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean,
right?
I mean, done. There, people who are middle-aged right now will never recover to the point that they were financially.
I agree.
Won't happen.
Yeah. Well, I don't recognize this country anymore, and I've been right here in the heart of it. You know, I don't recognize America anymore at all, and that's sad. That's very, very sad. You know, and now it's the politically correct thing where everybody has to watch their P's and Q's, not offend somebody else. I mean, it's just a mind game. The whole thing is a mind game, and it's really sickening. I was going to ask you a little bit about your Pegasus or the Pegasus hit team, and can you elaborate a little bit on that one?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Ask me.
Okay. Well, tell me about it. I mean, obviously, it was an assassin group of some kind?
Neutralizations. You know, as with anything in corporations, you have policies, and you have within a corporation, let's say, you have certain policies, and you need to get your executives in that corporation to stand behind the policies, and sometimes if they're valuable enough to keep around, you just have to do something to make sure that they're behind those policies. Mm-hmm. Pegasus was nothing more than that on a more elaborate and international scale. We had financiers, bankers, financiers, politicians, senior military officers around the world that we wanted to align to how we wanted things done. Mm-hmm. And we would have the leeway to use whatever methods possible. Normally we would try to intimidate them, blackmail them into doing what we needed them to do. Sometimes we had to kill them. Sometimes we had to assassinate them. I mean, we had 17 successful assassinations in my time with Pegasus.
Wow, that's pretty wild. Yeah, eliminate the competition, I guess, right?
Eliminate the naysayers and let the new guy come into place, and he'll understand what we want.
Right. And that's still going on, obviously. I mean, this is something that's a perpetual thing, isn't it?
Sure it is. There's no reason for that to stop.
Right. Yeah, but it's not the Pegasus hit team per se. It's just another organization and another branch here and there.
Well, Pegasus had been around since the 50s, and people just didn't know about it. And then
I
wasn't part of it then, but, you know, presidents have always used these entities, and they were run through through Defense Intelligence Agency, through the Department of Defense, and then directly under National Security Group, into the Terrorist Incident Working Group. So they're still around. They may not have the same name. As I have a friend who's a captain in the Army, and he said they were trained along with some Pegasus personnel. So the name's still out there. What they're doing, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Well, I mean, it doesn't surprise me at all. But what made you break orbit with all this?
You know, they kept trying to get us to do operations against U.S. citizens. And we'd hear of them. You know, we heard about the thing with Hart. We heard about other operations, and we always knew, and it was kind of a joke between us, how, because Bush would always, if you wanted to get him on a rant, give him one, put one name out in front of him, Ross Perot. He hated that guy.
And why?
They went back into the, well, they're both Texas boys for one thing.
Right.
And he had problems with him in Texas, and it continued. You know, Bush never really held a job. He was always a government employee of some sort. Mm-hmm. And Perot didn't respect him. I mean, he didn't respect him one bit, and you're talking about a politician, and he needs respect. He wants to gain that respect, and Perot hated Bush because of what the Republicans did on the October surprise. Those were his people who had been kidnapped and were being held hostage, that were held over for months just so that the election for Reagan could be successful. So it really, really, really came to a point there, and it stayed. And Perot knew he wasn't going to get elected, but he didn't want Bush to get elected. So he said his attitude was, I don't care what it's going to cost me, I'm going to get in there and make sure he's not elected. And Bush wanted him out of the race. And so at one of our OSG debriefings and mission briefings, he said, he looked at me and said, Tatum, I need you to take care of this. I want him out of the race. I said, sir, you know, I told you before, we don't work within the borders of the United States. And he said, I'm not asking you. I said, well, here you go. And like I had said, I was told early on, keep your insurance in your briefcase unless you need it. So I pulled it out, and I handed it to the security officer there and walked out. He said, wow. He said, where are you going? I said, well, I'm not going to take care of your business. Here's my resignation. And I handed him my insurance policy on tape.
Good for you.
So, and that was it. And I was told that I can't do that. And then I got a visit just about a month later. I was told, if you don't get your shit straight, Tatum, we're going to charge you with treason. I said, you guys can't charge me with treason. I haven't done anything wrong. I'll be damned if they didn't.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, they're all just crooks anyway. This is what I mean. It's insane.
Uh-huh.
You know? It's like the you know.
An appeals judge said, no, I can't do that, and let me out of prison. But I was in prison in the meantime. So.
How long were you in there?
27 months.
Jeez. Wow.
So, yeah.
Did they put you in isolation?
I was on diesel therapy. Actually, I was put in right out there by you in Florence. It was fairly new, and I was put in Florence, no human contact for about 4 months. I was held in Englewood, then I was moved to Florence for about 4 months, and then from there I was put on diesel therapy. I wasn't in the same and diesel therapy is the U.S. Marshals take you and move you from jail to jail to jail. They get you into a county jail after all the phones are turned off, and they pick you up in the morning before the phones are turned back on. So they had these crews, and there were about three of us, that they were giving us diesel therapy for 5 months, every day a new place. And we get We get about 3 hours of sleep. One thing, they wanted to keep us away from telephones and communication with friends. Another thing, they call it diesel therapy. They feel that wears you down.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll acquiesce to whatever they want. Well, you know, diesel therapy wasn't anything. I was a prisoner of war in Vietnam. I was beaten, stabbed, tortured on a daily basis. Whatever they had for me, I had more for them.
Right, I applaud you for getting through that, by the way. How long were you a prisoner for?
32 wonderful days.
Jeez. Wow. And how'd you get out of that?
Marine Patrol came across the encampment where we were held. Didn't know we were there. And out of the 13-man team that went into Cambodia after the Marine Patrol won the gunfight, the firefight that they got in, three of us made it out. Two actually lived, myself and our platoon sergeant.
My goodness. Well, you're pretty darn lucky, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. You know, it's really sad when you think about all these lives lost and all these people fighting the good fight, or at least they think they're trying to fight the good fight, and then there's all this corruption behind the scenes. It's really unfortunate that it plays out this way.
Yeah, you know, and especially when you see lives lost. for this. And I mean this, folks. I mean the lives lost that you see going on because of this false war. And that's absolutely false war when we went in to get Saddam Hussein the second time. You know, they're my friends who were intelligence officers at the Department of Defense blatantly told the Bush administration that they could not interpret any of the intelligence that we had as him having anything left as far as weapons of mass destruction. There's nothing that they see that indicated that. And so they'd take something out and they'd take a satellite photo and they say, look at this. Can that be a delivery system? Can that be a lab? Well, you know, sure it can be, but nothing says it is. And you know, you say, well, nothing says it isn't, so it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
right.
That's how they misuse the information to be able to go in and gain control of those oil wells.
Mm-hmm. And that's really what it's about, isn't it? It's always about money.
It is about money, and you know, you look at who got the defense contracts. They weren't even bid. They were all given to ex-Cheney companies that were friendly with the administration. Companies that weren't friendly with that administration were left out of anything. So, you know, it was all the good old boys network.
Right. So what do you think they're going to achieve in the final end game? I mean, what is their motivation?
Well, you know, what I see in the final end game is the same thing that happened to Rome. Same thing that happened to Germany. It just implodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that too.
Yeah. And I don't want to be here when it happens.
Well, yeah, and that's the problem I'm seeing also. I'm seeing it happening soon instead of, you know, down the path here. So, yeah, I don't know why people don't get a red flag because I'm getting like a real red alert, man, big time. So,
yeah.
It's in your face.
DEFCON 9, huh?
Yeah, really. So when do you have to go to court now? Aren't you scheduled to go to court or no?
Yeah, in mid-November. I go back to court mid-November. Uh-huh.
Okay. So
and then I'm all done with everything next year in April.
What do you have to do in April?
Nothing. Leave.
Okay. Excellent.
That's when I'm allowed to get my passport again.
I can't believe they're giving you such a hard time about all this crap.
Well,
I
think they want me to leave before the election.
Really? Oh, yeah.
Or get in prison. Leave or be in prison. One of the two. I don't think they care which way.
Well, isn't their profession kind of a prison in its own? I mean, once you get, it's like a roach motel. Once you're in, you can never get out, you know?
Yeah, but they live well, and they have lied to themselves for so long. But, you know, in a way, it's true. Because these guys, they're so nefarious, and the deeds that they do, that they get to the point that they, just like George Herbert Walker Bush, he got to the point that he was so paranoid, he was trying to get us to go after everyone and everything. And he just lived in this paranoia. And I mean, we could tell when he wasn't on his drugs, when he didn't take his drugs, because he'd come up with some damn crazy-ass stuff he wanted us to do.
Jeez. Well, what kind of meds was he on?
He was on psych meds.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Holy cow. So what was his problem? Was he diagnosed as schizophrenic or something?
I don't know. They never let us know. We just know that many times we'd have to, when we'd take him, when we'd fly out to different missions and support missions when he'd travel, like in Honduras and so forth, the doctors, he travels with his doctors, and many times we would pose as medevac pilots at our special operations aircraft. We'd put a Red Cross on the side, and we'd be flying the doctors behind the president. So
that's very interesting.
And talk to him. Wow. Talk to the colonel, you know, find out what's going on with him. And he's got his psych meds. He's okay.
Jeez, the stories you could tell. My goodness. So is that all part of the Tatum Chronicles or no?
No, the Tatum Chronicles is only our work in Honduras during the Iran-Contra. In the early 80s, you know, we formed the Contras to combat communism in South America. And so what happened was CIA, through Ollie North, recruited a bunch of Somozan, ex-Somozan military, which were the people who were going around killing people in Nicaragua, and they recruited them to combat the Sandinistas, who were actually voted in. And so here we had these killers out there, and we were supporting them. The Boland Act was enacted by Congress when they found out that the CIA had a secret war going on down there. And I want to tell you that the DEA was kicked out of Honduras and Nicaragua during those years. They didn't want them there investigating anything. And this is the story about what we were flying. We were posing as medevac pilots because the Boland Act did not allow offensive support, only humanitarian support. So we'd fly all kinds of stuff in humanitarian support to the Contra camps in Nicaragua, Honduras, and we'd pick up the coolers of cocaine, fly them back, deliver them out to San Lorenzo and other fields where aircraft, civilian and military, would pick them up. Some would fly them back to Panama. Some would fly them up to the U.S. Mm-hmm. And that's the story about that, including the actual flight plans. Now, in those flight plans, there were other crew members on board those aircraft. And when we got back to the United States, one of the medics and myself went and filed a complaint. They told us they'd handle it and nothing ever happened. You know, so I mean, I called North. I worked for him. I called North. I said, you know what we're carrying in this? Yeah, there's damn cocaine in these coolers. He said, yeah, don't worry about it. Those coolers are bound for the international courts. We're going to be trying the Sandinistas and their government for this. Right. Amazing. That never happened.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's so much corruption. I mean, it's just really ridiculous at this point. I mean, how can you even prosecute anybody in any form or design here in America when they're doing this kind of crap behind the scenes?
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's like, what's the point anymore? I guess it's all lawlessness. There are no laws anymore. Everything needs to be thrown out at this point.
Well, the laws are whatever they want to support, whatever they
right.
want. That's it.
Yeah, but for the average American, oh my goodness.
No,
yeah.
You're toast. Hey, look.
Yeah, I mean. Go ahead.
Right here in Florida. Let me give you one. The reason I have to go back to court on the 16th is, we were coming home from seeing the manatees in Crystal River, Florida. Had dinner. I had three beers driving home. And I noticed someone was following me. And I said, what the hell is this? And so I took a turn off the road and went through a subdivision. And the one car came in and followed me. I turned down another road and subdivision. I slowed down to make sure that they could keep up with me. And a car kept following me. And then a second car joined them. And they kept following me through this subdivision. So I pulled up in someone's driveway. And we got out of the car and walked up to the door like we lived there. And they just stopped and sat there. So I got back into the car. And we went up, drove up to another area and waited. A commercial area, and they ended up leaving. And then when we left, another car with his brights came on. It was a drizzly night. Another car came up with his lights on high beam, and so I turned off again. I was going to get my tire iron out and go after him. Ended up being a sheriff, and he wanted to know why I turned off the road. I said, because someone was following me. And so he took out his little breathalyzer. It's funny. And he gave it to my passenger first. And he asked my passenger. Now, this is just a random stop, right? He asked my passenger, are you a journalist?
Oh, brother.
And she happened to be one of our investigators. You know? So, and I'm sitting there. I said, oh, yeah, here we go. And so they pulled out their breathalyzer. They had her. They said, I want you to breathe in this. So blow in this. So she blew in it. They couldn't get it to work. And they changed batteries. They did everything. They couldn't get it to work. Then they walked over to me and they said, sir, we'd like you to blow in this. I said, oh, hell no. I'll give you my blood. Take me to jail. So they did. And I went to court. And the judge said, well, you know, we're going to have to hear this. So on the 16th, November 16th or so, we go back to court. And I went to a DUI school. Florida has a thing, if you want to keep your license, you have to go to a DUI school. Whether you're in court or not, you know, whether you're found guilty or not, you still have to go through this to get your license. to hold your license. So I went, and they told us in the DUI school that in Florida, you don't have to. You know, they have the different blow rates, like if you're 0.8, you're drunk. If you're 1.5, you're extremely drunk, and all that by law. Florida has that, but they don't use that. They use whether you seem to be influenced in your driving. So that can be no, you know, you don't even have to have alcohol in your breath, and they can say you're under the influence.
Wow.
And there's no way to combat it.
That's ridiculous. So that, once again, the corruption's in motion. I mean, how do you fight this stuff? I mean, literally, you just have to get up and leave the country.
So I just,
everybody.
I just laughed it off, and, you know, spent the night in jail. Yeah. Paid my bond, spent the night in jail, paid my bond. And, you know, and the cop kept saying, "Are you sure you don't want to blow?" I said, "I'm sure I don't want to blow in that damn thing."
Wow. It sounds like he was a little bored that night, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, there were three cars there, and it wasn't only... They called a couple others, so.
But who was originally following you? It wasn't the sheriff,
no,
right?
No, that's why, you know, I could have pled out and just got a slap on the hand, and that was it. It was all done.
Right.
But I want to go to trial.
I don't blame you.
Because I want to know who was following me. They said that, you know, they have a 911 call. I said, good, I want to talk to that person, whoever made that. Because they had to have a reason for pulling me over.
Right.
And so they...
That's perfect sense. Yeah. So did you get a description of the car that was following you at all, or no?
Not from them. I saw the car, yeah. I saw both
of
them. Yeah.
Do you think they were trying to make a hit on you or something?
I don't know what they were doing. That's what I want to know.
Mm. Right. Well, it's very suspicious
The suspicious fact is that they knew who was in the car with me.
Yeah, that's very...
You know?
Well, obviously, let me ask you this. Are you being bugged?
I'm always being listened to.
They're
listening
there you go.
Now. You can
guarantee
that.
You know, I'm used to that sort of thing myself, so hey, knock yourselves out. I don't care.
That's it.
I'm wired. It's a long story.
Yeah.
But, so that makes a lot of sense there. So obviously they're just tracking you while you're here in the U.S., I would say.
Yeah, and this on the 16th will be the start, because the minute they let me get in court and the minute that they say they received a 911 call, I can bring up the point that someone was following me. And they asked me, "Why do you think someone was following you, sir?" I said, "Because of who I am and what I've done in the past." And so I know that they're going to bring that up. And at that point, it opens it wide open. At that point, I can present who I think it was. And we can petition in ex-presidents. We can petition in all kinds of people and take a little DUI case and blow it through the roof.
Wow, that would be kind of nice to do that.
Yeah. Oh, my attorney's looking forward to it.
Really? Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, keep us informed on that one. I'd like to have you back to talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course when it's done. I'm not going to talk much about the case before. But.
Right. No, I understand. Yeah, so that involves a lot of the Pegasus files, right?
Tatum Chronicles is Tatum Chronicles are all those flights. And we went to the Office of Public Integrity, filed complaints there, and nothing ever happened. And we actually went back to get a reading on it, and they said, "Oh, we can't seem to find those." Yeah, I guess.
Wow, that's really amazing when I think about all this. Well, you have an incredible background, so, I mean, they should just give you a clear and let you go.
Yeah, that's what some people say, but that's not how
it
works.
I think you've more than earned it. I mean, my goodness.
Unfortunately, that's not how it works for us.
Yeah,
you know, once you cross the line like I did, they're you know, it's their egos.
Are you the only one who's really done that, or do you think there are a lot of others that have done it?
No, as a matter of fact, our night vision goggle instructor for special ops, the guy who trained us to fly night vision goggles, when I was held in prison, I looked across the compound one day and I saw Ron. I said, "Ron, what are you doing here?" He said, "Oh, the son of a bitches." I said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "They paid me, and we were paid on some missions like $50,000." He said, "They paid me in counterfeit bills."
Oh no!
So they took him down. No, they take there. It's there's probably over 2,000 out of the 800,000 people in federal custody. Over 2,000 of them are political prisoners right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe that. My goodness. Are they being held in the United States or outside the U.S.?
Right here in the U.S. Now, I'm not even, we don't even have a count on outside the U.S.
That's very concerning. Yeah.
But I mean, I have to say that in my time in special ops, we would fly people outside of the U.S. to other countries to be held. Yes, we would.
What was the motive behind that? Why?
We didn't ask. We were just aye aye sir.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 10 pounds.
That's like rendition, right?
Uh huh. Yeah. We took them to places like Costa Rica. They were paid well to house personnel. You know, in outside of Bogota, Colombia, there's a United States federal prison. And there's a lot of people there.
Oh, jeez. Wow. It's an iron fist, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You know, and they do that. They can't communicate with their families well that way. You know, they're isolated.
Right. Yeah, so I guess there's really no place to run.
Yeah.
You know, they track you down wherever you go. Wow. So insofar as this, I don't know, we're going to head for a break pretty soon in a minute here, but what about this ISIS, ISIL punk group? What do you think's going on with these guys? Who's funding them, and what's the deal with this? We're heading for a break. We'll be right back, everybody. Stay tuned. Raven Star Switching Hour.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
You have a choice, whether to be a madman or a bold genius. What's the difference? A madman is somebody who does the same action over and over and over for an unknown destiny. A bold genius is somebody who does the same action over and over and over again for a known destiny. That is why fortune always favors the bold. True titans of our times and of the past, who are bent on making most of their opportunities in life, are too busy to bother with luck. Luck is the good fortune you determine for yourself. So find the strength. Have the knowledge. Summon up the courage to accomplish and see that your dreams are limitless. Your dreams are the fabric that binds all of us together. Rise up! Rise up like fire! Ascend the ladder of your dreams. We choose to rise, not fall. We choose to live, not die. Shift to your tribe. Today, you shift to your tribe and carry your dreams forward until your life is a capital of tribe. I believe in you, and I know you can do whatever you want. You have an unlimited potential. This moment, this second, your life is an Olympian sunrise. This is your time.
This is your time, right here at RevolutionRadio.com, to rise up and make the difference. Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com. Listener supported 100%.
Is your data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? In survival, in gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank, or all the banks for that matter. Are your banking records safe in your hands? So when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say, hey, look, this is what I had. You have it. I want it back. Is your personal data safe? Family records? Address? Phone numbers? We'll squeeze on over to freedomslips.com. Yes, that's www.freedomslips.com. Click the banner on the homepage for the EMP-proof bullet drive to get the full scoop of everything that we offer. So, folks, keep your data safe for your peace of mind. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. Revolution Radio. You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back, everybody, to Raven Star's Witching Hour. I'm your host, Solaris Blue Raven, and I'm here with my very special guest, Chip Tatum. And, Chip, you with me?
I am.
On your fourth cup of coffee?
That's it.
Oh, I need more.
I won't be sleeping tonight.
Oh, that's all right. Well, I appreciate you coming on tonight, and I know everybody else does as well, so thank you very much for doing this.
Oh, happy to be here. You know, I heard that Nighthawk is moving services and trying to get faster speeds, and I can tell you, I'm building servers right now for myself for when I go down south. I want to be able to do video streaming and audio streaming from there. And
nice.
And it's quite expensive, folks, so anything you can do to help him, I know he'd mm-hmm. appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, please go ahead and donate if you can. We really appreciate it for sure. And let's see, we were talking about ISIS a little bit there. I was mentioning this. To me, they seem like a bunch of punks that are being funded. And what do you think about this?
ISIS are well equipped and have the backbone of a well trained private army. Mm-hmm. And let me explain to you where all these terrorists came from, folks. Back even before Carter's time, we realized the threat of terrorists and Islam and their feelings toward, actually it was toward Israel. And so we decided instead of them attacking Israel, this is the United States government now, decided that instead of allowing them to keep attacking Israel from all sides, that we would keep them busy. So we sent our special forces over as trainers and as advisors, and we built these wonderful camps out in the desert, and we sent explosives out. We sent our technicians out. We taught them how to use all these weapons, and we did it for years, and we'd send old tanks out and let them blow up old tanks. I mean, they were happier than pigs and you know what, and blowing stuff up out there. We sent a lot of money over to them. They all had money. Their families were there. The encampments were great. They had everything that they wanted. The government sent them women over, the women from Russia, from Poland, from the Bloc countries back then. We were sending them anything and everything that they wanted. And then when Clinton came into office, they said, well, this isn't ethical. We can't just keep training these guys out in the desert. So he cold turkey pulled everything. And when he cold turkey pulled everything, we had all of this equipment, all these highly trained explosive experts and military trained experts out there with nothing to do. And they had all this. When we pulled everything, we pulled the money too. And so they needed money. And they needed it fast. And so with all their training, with everything they had. They knew they had the poppy fields in Afghanistan, the heroin fields. They knew they had banks with gold. They knew they had all kinds of stuff, and all they had to do was go after it, and that's what they started doing. And they built themselves. They funded themselves, got themselves built. They went to their families in Saudi Arabia and other places, said, we need more money. Your dad, send money now. You can use Western Union if you like. and that's, we built them. The United States government built terrorism.
It's terrible. Yeah, that's horrible. And that's the truth of it.
And ISIS today is an offshoot of that, but they're, if you look at them, you look at what they've done. They've gone in. They've gone in. They've hit the banks, and they took over the oil fields. And you know, it looks like a very, very well planned group to me. And beyond that, they've it doesn't make sense. Here's what doesn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. They do all this. They've got control of what would be a third state in Iraq. They own all the oil fields. They own oil fields over in Syria also. And then they go out and they take a couple hostages and they put them on international television and cut their throats and say, United States and Britain, with a little survival knife, United States and Britain, You're our enemy, and we're going to keep doing this to these people as long, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't ring true.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't ring true for a group that is that well trained and that well equipped to call on the forces of the devil to come down on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems a little bit like an amateur to me. I mean, I don't know, but it just seemed like even the footage, it seems amateur, in my opinion. Now, I did ask you about that before off air. I mean, I think I texted you about some of the, you know, the way they were supposedly executing these people.
No, that's the way they do it. No, that's really, I mean, I've been to Syria. That's the way they just saw their heads off.
It's just like, to me, though, what's wrong with just shooting somebody, you know, like a real assassin would do? What is this thing about being gory and disgusting? Is that just, what, effect? Psychological effect or what?
For America's viewing pleasure, that's all that is. A lot of times they'll use swords and they'll chop heads off, but a lot of times, you know, they'll just use knives and saw them off because it's the mm-hmm. effect. Mostly they use this to punish people in front of crowds. Okay, and so the crowds see the gory effect of this, and it's a psychological effect on them to get them neutralized and come in line. But mm-hmm. they're doing this. Someone is doing this. I'm not saying it's ISIS that's doing this now. This mm-hmm. very well could be someone in the United States who wants to see the United States go to war again. You know,
mm-hmm. Things
get bad, things get worse in the economy. They want the economy to pick up again. All you got to do is get us dropping some bombs somewhere, and you know $1 billion a month in expenditures going back into the economy, back into defense contractors, picks things right back up, and all of a sudden you say, hey, defense contractors, you need to hire back in, and then you get a better economy report, better reports in the economy, and the stock
for
exchange
sure.
goes up. You have to understand, people, that Washington is nefarious in this. They will do whatever they need to do, and they will run a false flag.
Mm-hmm.
At the cost of a few heads, no problem.
And actually at the cost of the American people as well, mm-hmm. without a doubt. So what's the placement of the sheikhs? What is their position here on the game board? What do they do?
Well, you got sheikhs and you got sheikhs. I was asked that today.
Okay.
Sheikhs are the power brokers, the leaders, like lords and so forth, and sheikhs are the religious leaders. So they're just
mm-hmm.
they're just religious leaders in for their area.
Okay, and what about Dubai? What is Dubai? Obviously, they're very wealthy. Dubai is super filthy rich.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so they must be calling the shots across the board.
They're the playground for the Middle East. Dubai is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, seems like they would be.
Yeah, and they've that's where they. They vault a lot of their gold, silver, precious metals, plutonium. A lot of gold, silver, plutonium, yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, it's amazing. The more I know about this, the more disgusted I get. It's just like, man, it stinks. I'm telling you.
People say, what are they doing with plutonium? Whatever they want.
It's like anything goes. And then we've got, I did want to ask you a little bit about, I want to switch gears a little bit here and talk a little bit about the NASA's Apollo program that you were connected to in some way.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay, can you elaborate a little bit on that and what your position was with this?
Well, back in the old days, you know, in the 70s, a computer isn't quite what a computer is today. And so we had whole buildings that would equal one laptop. It was that we were that new into computers. And communications, we didn't have all the satellites up at the time that we had. And so we had a few satellites up, and the Apollo program was putting more satellites in orbit as part of their mission. And I was involved in the Apollo 16 and 17 moonwalks. We were the communications facility because they couldn't always communicate right straight back down to Houston or straight over to Florida. So they put us out in the middle of the Pacific in a place called Guam, and we had a huge HF and antenna field set up out there. We would receive the communications because we were in I guess a better homologic place for all the signals to come in, and we would receive those and then retransmit those signals and run control right out of our Guam facility at Anderson Air Force Base for both missions.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was a legitimate thing.
Yeah, we got to hear all kinds of stuff going on.
Okay,
yeah,
they
were really up. They were really somewhere.
Okay, you know, there's a big debate about how we got to the moon and this and that. So obviously, I was curious insofar as what your take is with the Black Space Program.
Oh, that's been around a long time. I mean, even here in Florida, they have the military side and they have the NASA side. That's
right.
Always been there.
Yeah. And did you have much? Did you do much with them at all, or no?
On the military, on the black missions, from the Black Pad and all, yeah, we did chase several times on the takeoffs. That's about all we had to do with it, though.
Okay, so what do you mean you chased?
Well, when they take off, you'll run the area for security, make sure no one's
okay.
In the area for security, and then we had chase aircraft that would be up at altitude, and you know they would for security purposes, making sure mm-hmm. the whole aerodrome was clear.
Okay, have you seen any UFO anomalies?
I've seen something, and I didn't know what it was, so that would be a UFO, I guess.
Was it ours? Would you suspect it might have been one of ours, or no?
You know, we're trained with flashcards, and especially in special ops, flashcards of everything known to our military and to our intelligence personnel, and at different angles. You know, we aren't just shown side view, front view. We're shown side, front, in any angle you can get with the aircraft that exists, anything that flies that exists, and so that we know whether we should shoot them down or not. And I'd never seen those before.
Interesting. Can you describe what they look like?
Elongated. Just elongated, fast-moving craft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's a lot going on, without a doubt. And that's another thing. You've got the breakaway black space program. You've got all these things happening simultaneously here, and then we've got this craziness going on with the corruption in these, quote-unquote, corporations disguised as governments. So where does it begin and where does it end? Is the question,
La
you know?
Cucaracha,
everybody leaves America, right?
You know, and people say, how can you do that? You're an American. I said, yes, I'm an American. I was born in this country, and I defended this country, and I, to this day, defend this country. And part of what I defend it for is so that every American can make a choice, and that's my choice.
Yeah, it's pretty sad when you think about it.
Yeah.
All the wars that have been fought here to protect this land and country, it's just so sad on so many levels. So what do you think about the Obama administration? What's your personal view?
Well, you know, I see that Obama goes against the grain in a lot of things that he does. But I believe that most recently, I believe that the stuff that went on at the White House was a wake-up call to him to get in line and get those troops over there. I think I believe that's what that was all about. He was warned, because if you'll recall, he said, no, we're not going to do anything. No, we're not going to do anything. No, we're not going to do anything. Oh, damn, now we got to do something, you know? Mm-hmm. And so right. What he wanted to do was a minimal response. I mean, it would have been a minimal response. And mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, you know, threats go up. So-called little threats, people getting into the White House. Look, he can say, you know, nothing's going to happen to me. I'm in the White House. Me and my family's in the White House. You're not going to, all of a sudden, someone gets all the way into the East Room, you know. Nuts.
Yeah, that was like a dry run or something. There was just something wrong with that.
No, it wasn't a dry one. It was a wake-up call. It was, we can do whatever we want to you. So you do what we tell you to do, or someone in your family's going.
Okay, so who is that? Is that the CIA? Who's doing it?
That's that shadow government. Whoever that may be now.
Well, wouldn't you say the CIA is connected to that?
Nah. No.
Nope?
Nah.
Okay.
No, when we worked for the NSGs, we worked for international groups. You know, we had people from the CIA, we had people from the Defense Intelligence Agency, we had Mossad, we had Turkish intelligence, Spanish intelligence, Danish intelligence, British intelligence. These are the people we work for. And that's what the Pegasus was. It wasn't just a little group of American soldiers like Delta Force. We were an international group, and we worked internationally.
Wow. How many were in that group?
There had to be over 200.
Wow, that's pretty big.
Yeah. And we had assets to pull from. I mean, if we needed something done in a particular area, we didn't have expertise in that area, we'd have our asset list, and we'd pull the assets from that worked in that area. Sometimes we did nothing more than fly geeks over. In one instance, I know we snuck a bunch of geeks over into France. They wanted to align finance, very, very well-situated financier / politician into ensuring that a vote went a certain way. And so we went in. He was told that if he didn't, that we'd have to do something to align him, and he just kept refusing. So we went in. They hacked in. We flew this team in. They hacked into the bank. took all of his money out and called him and said, you want your money back?
Oh, man.
You'll take care of this for us.
Jeez, you can't win with all this stuff going on.
No, you can't win.
How does anybody win? I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Man. And so who's the opposing force for you guys? Okay, so there were you all, and then who else would oppose you in your group?
Well, foreign governments would oppose us.
Okay.
You know, we had to get into those, because I mean, we weren't exactly invited into a lot of those countries, and if we went in, we had to sneak in, and that's one of the things that I was so good at. I was a pilot, and I could fly that baby in under any radar.
Nice. How'd you do that?
I'm not telling.
Oh, you brave! I have to ask. That's great, though. Well, and did you wear a disguise?
I mean, yeah, we had different. We had names. We had disguises. We had everything. You know,
other identities and things.
But,
okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, it sounds like an interesting life you've led.
It was good. I wouldn't change a lot of it. I would probably. Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't change a lot of it. I would.
Yeah.
I would have probably shot a couple other people though before I left.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So, what is the weapon of choice when they do an assassination or a takeout?
It depends on the mission. If it's long range, it's long range. If it's short range, I mean, I've used a 32 pistol, you know, 6 inches behind the head before. So I've used a stiletto to the heart. And
wow.
And the person, you know, stiletto to the heart has a drip section on the stiletto where the blood drips right down. You just set them down. They can't do anything. They just look like they're sitting comfortable under the tree, and you walk away, and nothing happens.
Man, no witnesses were around when you were doing this stuff?
Sure, there's witnesses, but the stiletto,
what do they do?
The stiletto works great. They just think the guy just sat down.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, so how did you get trained for this? Who taught you?
Oh, man. You know, I have to say, our best instructors were the Mossad.
Yeah, that's what I keep hearing now. Yeah. That name keeps coming up. Yep. Okay.
But for other things, for movement in and out, and for electronics, the best was British intelligence.
Sure.
So it just depended on what realm we were working in, or what realm we want to know about. As far as the combat effectiveness, it was the U.S.
Sure.
So.
It's interesting. So what about the electronics with British intelligence? What is their specialty? Can you elaborate on that?
Those boys can bug anything.
I wouldn't be surprised, yeah.
Yeah.
And even people, right?
Uh-huh. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I know that one. Oh, my goodness. Well, so when the British intelligence, what do they go by? What is their division name?
Well, you've got MI6 over there.
Okay, is that the one that was normally connected in?
Right.
Okay.
And
this is kind of new to me.
Now, this was under Thatcher when we worked with them. And so she was heavily involved, and you know, and people get pissed off at me when I said that Reagan was involved. But Reagan was involved; he was a president. He knew what was going on. The whole thing that you know, someone asked me the other day, was Reagan involved in that? And I said, this is what he told us: he boots on the ground, get over and do that. I got your back, boys. And that's the way it always was with him, you know.
Uh-huh.
And you knew it was all okay. But once Bush took over, boy, it was nothing but problems. I mean, you know, we were picked up in a Yugoslavian, on a trip into Yugoslavia once, posing as Mormon missionaries, and one of the guys, now this is a Mormon missionary, supposedly, one of the guys got involved with a girl over there, and, you know, we ended up getting arrested, having to break out. So, you know, and our government, you know, it was the way it is, they're not going to help us get out. You know, they don't know us, never heard of us, you know.
Right. Wasn't that the protocol? Isn't that what they normally are supposed
to
do?
Yeah, it is, but they can back channel, you know, too, you know. But,
right,
you know,
yeah.
But not Bush. He wouldn't back channel anything.
Yeah. So what about his son?
Shrub, yeah. He never quite grew up to a Bush.
Oh, my goodness. They're all compromised. Now, another thing I want to ask you is, do you think that they're under some form of mind control?
I think that they're under some form of ego control. No, they aren't mind controlled. They're just evil as hell.
So where does that come from? Is it just their upbringing or what?
Yeah. I guess. I mean, we've worked with a diversity of people, nationalities, but nothing equals these Bushes. I mean, you know, I have friends say, oh, they're aliens, Gene. I said, well, you know, I don't know. I was married to an alien once. She was nothing like that. She was evil, but not like these guys.
Yeah, there's definitely a ruthless side to them, without a doubt.
And you know, I don't know where it comes from. You know, Prescott Bush was involved with the Nazis, and you can go all the way back to Prescott and come forward. But, you know, the power of the Bushes wasn't really the Bushes. George Herbert Walker and the Walker family are the power brokers behind the Bushes. The Bushes were just the political front men. The Bushes never really had or really never made a lot of legitimate money. Every business that they opened, even their Harkin Oil, all that stuff, were flops. But they always had Walker back behind them. The Walker family, thus the George Herbert Walker Bush, and people don't understand that. Y'all want to get into something, go investigate the George Herbert Walker 2, 3, and 4, and investigate that family and see what they're up to.
Right.
Scott.
All the money, again.
And Scott Walker is one that they need to look at real hard, because Scott Walker's real name is Prescott Walker.
Very interesting. Yeah. Wow, it just gets uglier by the second here.
Mm-hmm.
I do appreciate your information. I know everybody else does, too. But, man, it's just like, is there any good news ever? It's just,
Sure, there's a lot of wonderful places to be. It's just not in the United States. You know, the United States has overlawed everything. I mean, they've gotten to the point that they've just taken control of every single thing. And people, my friends overseas, you know, when I was talking to a friend and I said, well, you know, my friend is coming over. He just lost his home. They said, how did he lose his home? I said, well, he didn't pay the homeowners association fee, and so they took it from him, and they didn't understand a homeowners association fee. And then they got taught. We get in a big roundtable discussion over some, you know, some beer and pork, and we started talking about things, and they said, well, it doesn't sound like you people even own your homes. No. Like, you know, what's this American dream? Because it sounds like you're just renting your land if they can just take it from you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you look at it, it looks like you got to think, you know, you don't pay your taxes. Taxes, you can look at taxes as a lease from the government because the government owns that land. They're just leasing it to you.
Mm-hmm. So, exactly.
Big land lease.
Yeah, it's pretty sad, actually, when you think about it. A lot of people don't understand that. I mean, people are working their butts off here in America. They have their nose to the ground. They're not paying attention. And, you know, by the time they look up, it's all over.
Yeah, and down there, they don't see these problems. That, you know, mm-hmm. you own your land there. If you don't, naturally, they do have taxes. Some taxes, they don't have income taxes, but they have other taxes. They have sales taxes. They have land tax. I mean, the farm that I had, I paid $150 a year in taxes for over 100 acres.
Oh, wow. That's nothing. That's awesome.
But some people don't pay that, and it's okay. It's never taken from them. But when they do sell it, the buyer has to add that amount in for the purchase and pay off those taxes to make it clean for the new person, so...
So what about locals? Is there local mafia or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. It's so corrupt down there. But you know what? You know what's going on. I mean, if you mm-hmm. want something done, you go to them, you pay them, and you get it done.
Yeah, up front,
what's,
right?
What's not, it's transparency. It's very transparent down there. You know what to do. You know that if you're going to come in there and you're going to go into villages like these missionaries do and like the U.S. government does, and tell these people in these villages that they should turn in so-and-so, turn in anyone you know that's dealing in drugs, you know that you're probably going to get killed or kidnapped. But if you're a tourist going down there and you're not doing anything or bothering anyone or, you know, getting into other people's business, you're going to have a great time down there.
Mm-hmm.
Look how good a time the Secret Service had down there.
It sounds like they're always having a good time.
And that's nothing strange, I have to say. You know, I've been around those guys for years and years, and they're hard partiers. They just got caught.
Good grief. Yeah, it's a rough life for them, isn't it?
Yep.
My goodness. Yeah. That's just, it's interesting to see. It's like they live in another reality completely.
But it is in a way because all the travel is kind of tough. I mean, it's especially mm-hmm. for family men.
I wouldn't think they would be.
Mm. No, a lot of them are family men, family women.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
That'd be crazy, especially on presidential detail. A family man, you know, saying, I'll take a bullet for my president, he needs to back off and think about his family. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, these days I would sacrifice a lot for my country, but man, what country's left these days? And I don't want to sound cynical, but I'm really thinking that our country is pretty much gone and that, you know, it's only a matter of time before they change the name, you know, from America to something else anyways. So, you know, who knows what they're going to turn it into. I was going to ask you a little bit about the mind control drugs you mentioned. I've heard you before talk about this. And what's the best drug they use for in basically controlling the mind?
The best drug that we used, even today, I don't know that any that can beat it, is a form of scopolamine, the natural form of scopolamine. The synthetic form is great and it's very powerful. It just doesn't do the same thing that it does from the Daturas from the mountains of Peru, and the powder that we can extract from those, the Datura, it's the trumpet flower. You've seen the big white and yellow and red and orange trumpet flowers. Mm-hmm. A lot of people use them for hallucinogens. I mean, down there they'll use the flower itself, and they'll put it under their pillow for dreams. You know, it's a light hallucinogen. Mm-hmm. But the whole plant, the Datura down there, has hallucinogenic effects. But they would take the seeds, they would extract the seeds and suspend the scopolamine from the seeds and in a evaporatable, like acetone or something like that. And mm-hmm. The powder that's left is called Burundanga. And it's one of the most powerful mind control entities I've ever seen, chemicals I've ever seen. I know that it was used against Isaac, the guy who killed Isaac Rabin. We used it in several instances, many, many instances, not several, many. And now the bad guys have gotten hold of the lighter form of it, and they use it, they'll rob someone. And look, it's odorless, it's tasteless, it's a white powder, and they call it devil's breath because all you have to do is have a little bit on your hand and push it into someone, blow it in their face, or just put a little bit in their Coca-Cola. They don't know it's there. Or have a little in a cigarette. Offer someone a cigarette. You know, and they're done. They're done. They're in your complete control. You've got them for about 4 hours before you have to dose them again. You can keep them dosed for up to 2 weeks. They'll do anything you say. Anything you say. There is absolutely no. They have no inhibitions. They will obey anything you say. They will tell you anything you want to know, because they can't block it, and they'll have complete amnesia when they come off it.
Oh my goodness! Wow. That's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Called Burundanga. People can Burundanga. They can look it up on the internet. It's out there. I brought this up years ago. No one knew about it. And then someone called the DEA in the U.S. They didn't know about it. They called the DEA down in Bogota, and they knew all about it.
Really? They didn't know it?
No.
That's so strange.
Big secret. Well, scopolamine's been around for years. They used it in the 50s. Doctors did, on women for birthing. They would give it to the woman so that she would forget all the painful effects of giving birth.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they found that it entered the bloodstream of the baby, and it was too dangerous for both of them, so they quit using it.
Mm-hmm. Man, well, that explains a lot, with people acting kind of bizarre here and there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, people, you know, your banks or your bank accounts are wiped out, and the good thing about the Burundanga is, people don't show the effects. So you can walk into a bank, you can be instructed, go into the bank, take out all your money, close your account, and come out. If you're asked any questions, say this. If they want to know this, say this. And it's in there, it's embedded in them, and they answer boom, 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 and they come out to give you the money. They go their way, you go your way. And next day he goes to the bank to get some money because he needs it. Well, sir, you just closed your account yesterday, don't you? No, I don't. I did not.
Yes, oh, my goodness. Wow. So did you use that a lot?
We used it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
On high-profile people?
And not so high-profile, yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. Wow, that's just mind-blowing. It almost reminds me of a zombie drug, but it's not, is it?
No, because they're not zombie-like.
They're
alert. They're alert. Right.
Yeah, that's
amazing. The worst effect they have with that is dry mouth, but that's about it.
That there's no residual effect.
Well, you can dose them wrong and they can die.
Or they
can go blind. So, you know, those are the bad points to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow, I'm just learning all sorts of things here tonight. Everybody's getting a fast-forward lesson in covert information here. It's quite interesting. A little disturbing, but not really. You know, I think we're all immune to a lot of stuff these days, you know. It's just part of the program, I guess.
Yeah, I think we should start, you know, remember back in the 90s, I guess we had 80s and 90s, we had Patriot radios over shortwave, right? And now we've moved into radios in the internet. But, you know, I think even more effective than this is America needs visual effects. I think we need to try to get into podcasting and the visual visual shows going in. And I hope that's my hopes in these servers that I bought, that I can get that going down there. You know, in South America, they have the same infrastructure we have here. You know, you have McDonald's, you have Home Depot, you have everything down there you have up here, and it's a third the cost of living is here.
Wow, that's, you know, really
so,
nice.
So I'm going into retirement with my pensions, and I can live down there very well off of a retirement. And most people can. I mean, you can live. I have friends down there who are getting I think $1,400 a month Social Security, and they live like kings.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You know, I think a lot of people are going to be migrating outside the U.S. if this keeps up.
Well, you know, America keeps saying, oh, all these countries are so dangerous, and they're, you know, bullshit.
They
do not want the money to leave. They don't want the money to leave. That's what it comes down to.
Right. Yeah, it sounds like it would be a good place to look into. Well, we're certainly getting a flood of people here right now, and, of course, anything can happen. The turn of a dime.
So. A lot on the border, a lot going into the fusion centers. You know, those fusion centers were built years ago. most of them, and they're not only for them, they're for others too. A lot of the fusion centers aren't even operating. They have security, but aren't operating yet. So, but they're there.
Right. Those are just a compilation of all kinds of data, right?
No, they have beds.
You're kidding
me. Prisons.
Oh, they are?
All these military bases we closed? Hello.
Oh, no way.
No way.
Oh, God. I thought the fusion centers were the ones that were just all data.
No, No.
Oh, my goodness.
Fusion centers are prisons.
So, really, and they're privatized, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, and they're government, too. But you'll see a fusion center in Homestead Air Force Base. They have an old Air Force Base there they closed down. They have other Air Force Bases they closed down. And you'll see that they put Constantina wire over large facilities and all this, but nothing's going on there. No one's around. Just security is driving around. And it's private security, you know, whether it's Wacken Hut or who, not Wacken
Hut. Most people are not real security, though, man.
No.
You know what I mean? I know. I mean, it's kind of like Rent-A-Cop, in my opinion. I don't mean to sound harsh, but yeah, that's really interesting. Well, it's becoming one big prison planet then, apparently.
Yep, that's what it is.
And the motivation is what? Everybody's a slave.
The United States has more people in prison than all other countries combined, so.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's absolutely insane.
And we keep buying their rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of people don't, but yeah, there's a great percentage that's just not waking up here. So I think, like I said, by the time they do, it's too late anyway.
One other thing that really pissed off that sheriff when he was talking to me, he said, I want you to put your head back, close your eyes, and say the ABCs. And I laid my head back, and I started saying the ABCs. He said, you need to close your eyes. I said, are you crazy? You're a cop. You've got a gun. I'm not closing my eyes. Have you not been watching TV? He really got mad at me over that. He said, that's not representative of all of us. I said, in my world it is.
No kidding. Yeah.
So.
Oh, man. This is too corrupt for me. I've got to get off this planet. Mm. I just can't deal with it anymore. I swear. I think we all need to get a ship and get out of here. That's my my mission, should I accept it. But, yeah, so what's a good haven? I mean, is there any safe haven here in the United States, would you say, right now, or no?
No, no.
Okay.
Nope.
So basically, if people want to kind of break orbit with this stuff, they're going to have to leave the country?
Yeah. I mean, it's so controlled in every realm. I don't see any little gulch laying around anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't see it either.
Yeah.
What about Canada?
Well, you know, it's a funny story. You know, Quebec decided it was going to leave, try to vote and secede from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
That was years ago. And we had a mission come down where when the vote was coming in, we went up to the borders and we stood at the borders. We stood by on alert at the borders. And we actually had a plan put in place. That was under North, for us to go in and take over Canada, take over Quebec, if that happened.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but they didn't. They ended up not voting for it, so we didn't cross the border and go in.
Hmm.
But we were going to. I mean, that was the plan. So no, Canada's not. Canada's a little safe because it is separate from here. But you know, it's right there, and it's cold up there.
Oh, I'm used to cold weather.
Yeah, I hear you.
Looking at Antarctica, Iceland.
I kind of like the margaritas and pina coladas and going south, you know.
Yeah, it does sound nice,
yeah.
I must say. Yeah. Well, I don't blame you. And like I said, I think you might have company because people are wondering what's happening here. And I know I'm getting a red alert. So, I mean, I can't seem to clear that on my...
You know, there are countries down there. You have Ecuador. It's a dollarized nation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they do have a socialist president, but, you know, he's not so bad. You just got to get your mindset changed that you're not going to do business the same way you do business down there. But you have to get your mindset changed regardless in what country you go to, because
mm-hmm.
it's not the United States of America, and it's not the same as living here. And you just, a lot of people would come down there trying to do business, and within 2 years, they spend all their money.
Right.
So, and weren't successful in doing business. However, now that we're more international and more transparent, it's easy. It is easier for them to do business.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Yeah. Well, I think in order for them to survive, they might have to leave the United States. So we'll see what happens with this Ebola stuff. Yeah. I know people are concerned about that. So, what, do you think it's going to get out of hand?
I think it already is out of hand in the fact that it's already causing panic.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, someone catches the flu, where are they going to go?
Right.
Normally, if someone has the flu, they'll just go to the pharmacy and pick up something for a cold. You know, they're not going to run into the hospital. Now those emergency rooms are going to be boggled under. They're going to have to do something to see, here, he's got a fever, he's coughing. We're going to have to quarantine him. Boom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my biggest concern is quarantining, like, areas, mm-hmm. cities, and that sort of thing. And once they start doing that, you know, you get boxed in, you know.
Fusion centers.
Oh, man, there's no way in hell I'm going to any one of those. That's it, man. I'm out of here. I'm putting up with this crap. I'm sorry. I'm not doing it. It's not... Oh, I'm telling you. I certainly appreciate you being on tonight. I do want everybody to know how they can get in touch with you. And also, you have a radio show now or not?
I don't. I am a co-host on Veterans Today, but I've pretty well backed off that.
Okay.
But I do, when Stu needs me, I go on to Veterans Today and stand in for him.
Nice.
On Revolution Radio on Monday evenings at 6. 6 to 8 Monday evenings.
And I have a wellspring of data.
Also, many times on the Micro Effect, I stand in on the Micro Effect. But running my own show, I was going to do the Pegasus File for my own show, but I've decided I'm just going to spend my time getting these servers built and going on other people's shows.
Excellent. So don't you have Firehorse or something like that? Don't you have something else?
I own Firehorse Network. And what Firehorse is we'll take all the shows. Look, everyone can't listen to you from midnight to 2 because they work or something. So what we do is we put shows up on Firehorse on demand.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go in. You don't have to sign up for Firehorse. You just go in, look at on demand, look for the show you want to listen to and the date, and you just click it and you can listen to it. You can hear
nice.
You can hear what Solaris Blue Raven had to say on October 4th.
All right. And you as well.
Yeah.
It's a very relaxed interview, by the way, so that's nice. Yeah, I really do appreciate you being on tonight. There's so many questions, though. I have so many things I haven't gotten through tonight, so I'm going to have you back for sure. So I was going to ask you, have you ever been, obviously you've been on a hit list of some kind, right?
For me to be hit?
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm probably one of the most protected men in the world when it comes to that with this insurance policy. The last thing they want is for me to get killed and that stuff to go out.
Excellent.
As a matter of fact, it was said that I was dead at one time. My son called me and said, "Dad, oh, thank goodness I got a hold of you. They said you were dead. You said your body washed up on the shores of Panama without a face and without fingers." I said, "Well, how'd they know it was me?" And that must have hurt. But it wasn't. And, you know, a lot of people tried to say it was someone just putting out the information to protect me. But... my information was it was some journalists trying to get my information released by saying I was dead. They thought the information would be thrown out to the public, but they don't quite know my system, so that's not
right.
Going to happen that easy.
And of course you have backup, so in other words, there's no one place for this type of information, right?
It's in 8 places, yeah.
Excellent.
And that's really good. Just because someone says I'm dead, that's not going to happen. There are checks and balances in place, so. But yes, and the last thing I want is for this information to go out and for me to really be gone. So,
yeah, I would think so. Uh-huh. You have a lot of data that could really screw people over, I would imagine.
But I do have enemies. I have to say that, and you know, I had to take out. The Mossad had some people that they needed to be taken out of the Mossad, and it's against their religion, I guess, to take their own people out.
So, is that right?
That they explained to us that it was beyond their capability to take their own man. And so we did it for them.
Wow. Is that hard? It must be very difficult to assassinate people, unless there's a real reason. You know, they're just real evil pieces of crap. But it must be difficult to do that.
You know, when you look at it like you're as a military man, it's not so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes... when you do it, it's not so hard. It's scarier than shit because you just don't know how it's going to end up.
Right.
Afterwards, sometimes that's the impact is afterwards, not before, not during. Afterwards, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I would imagine you get kind of haunted by that sort of thing, energetically.
Sometimes you have nightmares.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, it's pretty hardcore, without a doubt. Have you...
You know, and a lot of people talk about trying to be taken out. You know, I know Stu said, no, they tried to get me. I said, well, Stu, be glad it wasn't me. We wouldn't be talking now.
No kidding.
No, our team was 100%. You know,
wow.
But the thing is, when we do a neutralization, many times the effect that they wanted out of that neutralization wasn't quite achieved, so we had to go back and do something else to try to get it onto the track that they wanted, or we had to change the track.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you know when they make these plans, they said, look, plans and programs would come in and say, look, we need this person out. Because we want this person to come in. Okay, we'll take this person out. And the next thing you know, this person got scared shitless and said, I'm not going. not if you guys do that easy. Let someone else go in. And we didn't have that person in line. So, you know, so all the planning that you do, sometimes it doesn't succeed and it just throws everything back even farther. I know that the corporations, and that's who we call them, is the corporations, did not plan on things going too far past the turn of the century for a lot of things to be in place, but that was put back farther, and it's done now what they wanted in place. But
wow, yeah, it seems like it's all going in speed ahead.
The financial separation, and it's all there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Certainly looks that way. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it almost reminds me of the mob. I mean, it's pretty much similar, right?
I think it basically replaced and overcame the mob.
Yeah, I say, what happens to those guys?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
You look at the mob, you know, and you don't have the mob anymore. You have people like Sheldon Adelson, the big billionaires in the countries that really run things. So.
Right. Well, and obviously you catch your targets off guard, right? You've never actually looked at them eye to eye, or have you?
Oh, yeah. No, we would never just kill someone first.
Mm-hmm.
No, they'd always be warned. They'd be given the opportunity. Normally they'd be given the opportunity. Look, we had a guy in Nicaragua. He was a Contra leader. And he was given the opportunity to get all the documents turned over and back off. And the Bush was going to make sure that he was comfortable the rest of his life, but he had it in his mind that he wanted to be one of the leaders in the new Chamorro government in Nicaragua, and she didn't want him. She said he's just too roguish of a person, and she couldn't control him as one of her ministers. So she said, there's no way I'm putting him in. And so we went to him. We said, you know, you're just not going to make it in there. Look, why don't you just go retire early? His name was Enrique Bermudez. He was one of our Contra commanders, but he had done the same thing I did, collected all this insurance, you know, and had all this stuff tucked, you know, at home. And he said, I'm going to take this. I'm going to give it to the press if you don't give it in, and that way the whole world will know all the drugs and the murdering that we did on your behest. Speaking of Bush and Reagan and the whole Contra thing, and he left us no alternative, and so we told him, you know, well, you know what's going to happen. He said, there's no way you can do that. He said, I'm a very public figure. I said, okay.
That's another thing. Well, yeah, people think if they go public that keeps them protected, but it obviously does not.
Nope. Nope.
Right.
2 weeks later, he was dead.
My goodness.
Yeah, it's...
Wow. Oh, boy. Well, I don't know what to say. It's almost sad, you know, when you think about all this stuff and all the lives that are lost and all. It's all about politics and money and corruption and everything else. And I appreciate you being so honest about your information, by the way.
Well, I can only say, give you the information, because when they charged me with treason, we went before a federal judge and had to file what's called a Classified Information Protection Act, whereas I would bring in to the courtroom for a part of my defense what I intended on saying. And so we presented all that to the judge, and he had to make the decision, are we going to have an open courtroom, are we going to have a closed courtroom? If it's classified, I have to get the attorneys and all of the jurors security clearances, and at what level of the information is this? Is this considered secret, top secret? And how hard it would be to set a jury for that? And so he decided that he made the decision that it is not classified. So everything that I gave to him at that point, I can talk about, and that's what I'm talking to you about today. There's a lot I can't talk to you about. Because it wasn't in that Classified Information Procedures Act. And and he said, I'm going to say it's not classified, but you can't use it in your defense.
Mm. Wow. So. Well, I wish you best of luck on that, and have you back on here, too. And what about the red list and the blue list I hear about, these lists that people get put on? Do you think there's any credibility to that?
Oh, yeah, there's lists. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, people are flagged. It's not red and blue. I guess they're flagged at different levels. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what's the protocol with that? What do they do? They just kind of profile them, or what?
They're profiled and then they're stored away. And depending on the tag, they're put into the NASA computers or in the NSA computers, and they're monitored a little more heavily than others.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's like Big Brother everywhere. My goodness. So is there any... I know there was talk of nuclear sabotage here in the United States not too long ago. Have you received any information on that?
We joined the nuclear program to get rid of all of our nukes. And instead of getting rid of them, what they decided to do, what some of them... decided to do was build these nukes into smaller entities. In other words, you have a 10 megaton bomb warhead. They're going to take the explosive, they're going to take the fusionable material out of that and make a smaller one. They're going to make a half a kiloton building buster or a small tactical weapon out of it. And that's what they did. Is that what you're talking about, something along those lines?
Well, yeah, I've heard that they have had, there was some sort of possibility that we might be having some nuclear issues here in the United States. And, yeah, with probably smaller nukes, I would imagine.
That's Lindsey Graham, I think. Lindsey Graham's just he's going to go out and yell whatever he yells. He wants to be president.
Okay, so there's really no credibility behind
there are the small nukes that can be used. Where they would be used, and the good thing about a small nuke is, the radiation pattern and everything is very small, and you don't have the complete loss of the terrain forever. So they could be used very effectively in certain areas in the United States. Yeah, who has those? Who gained access to those, and who has them today? I can't tell you, but I know from friends. That was talked about being done years ago, and now that they have the programs in place, I imagine that's what a lot of them and the technology, a lot of them were done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems that way. Well, who do you think is the real superpower these days? It's obviously, I think the U.S. is kind of falling down the tunnel here.
Yeah, I'm asked that a lot, and I'm asked, who's really in charge? People think China is a superpower, but China's never really been at war. They helped out a little in World War II, but they're not that huge of a warring nation. Their capability is built as a defensive capability. If you want to look at someone who's more offensive, I'd look at Russia.
Yeah, me too. But yeah, they seem to be evolving quite fast.
And I think if I were Putin, he's a smart cookie. In 85, I was across from him in Germany. And he was in KGB, and I was with the other guys, And he's very intelligent. He went into Ukraine and basically took over Crimea without a battle. What's going on in the rest of Ukraine is something else, and I don't believe that he's that heavily involved in that. I think he just, antagonizes it. He just pushes buttons there. But if I were him, they have huge oil fields in Russia. He would be, if I were him, I would make sure ISIS was solidly in charge of those oil fields and strike a deal with them. to control those oil, oil fields through Russia, and he would be the strongest power in the world because he'd own the most oil.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly looks like they might be heading in that direction. We're about ready to run out of time here. Chip, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been a pleasure and an honor to have you on, and I hope to have you back.
Doris, great to be here.
Yeah, it's really impressive to listen to what you have to say, and I do appreciate your honesty and integrity. And everybody, thanks for tuning in tonight, and also stay tuned for Shiny Side Out with David Dunder and Mekki coming up next to sell you on into the night. And I believe they have Dan Winnington on or something. Probably messed up that last name. But anyway, stay tuned for that. And is there anything else you'd like to go ahead and promote? We just have a few minutes here, but I just want to make sure I give you the floor.
Well, I'd like people to visit us at chiptatum.com, chiptatum.com, and Firehorse Network. Whenever you want to hear any of the Revolution Radio's rebroadcasts. We've got a few of the hosts that send their stuff over to us. Not many, but a few.
Excellent. That's awesome. And also, if people want to support you, how can they do that?
They can do it right on chiptatum.com. I've got the Legal Defense Fund. I'm running there trying to get enough money to pay this attorney that wants to go to battle. So anything.
Is that federal, you say?
That's state.
Okay.
Federal is going to be tough to get through, but state, boy, we're looking forward to that.
Right. Well, I wish you best of luck on that one, and do stay in touch with me on that as well. And probably going to run out of time here real quick, but who's running the NSA right now?
Money.
Is that
That's it?
Yeah.
They're contractors. They're private contractors.
Right. I was just wondering who the big power play was behind it.
Well,
all.
Yeah. You've got AIPAC. You've got all the members of AIPAC, Adelson. You've got the Carlos Slim in there. I mean, you've got people from around the world that are running them. I mean, they're basically a mercenary contractor outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Thus the boy who's hiding out in Russia.
Man, I'll tell you what. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. My goodness, we can go down another rabbit hole with that one next time you're on the show, perhaps, right?
You bet.
Yeah, I'm sure you have a lot to say about it, too. And I don't know if we're going to have enough time, but what is your impression with that whole scenario?
I believe that they ought to take one of those tactical nukes that they built and drop it in Utah in that new facility.
I think somebody's tried already. Didn't it have a meltdown of some kind, an electrical problem?
I hope so. you can buy electromagnetic weapons from other countries that they're starting to build now. It would be nice to take that and aim them right at them.
Yeah, no kidding. And with that being said, everybody have a wonderful week, and thank you again for tuning in. Thanks again, Chip. Really a pleasure.
Bye.
Take care.